You are listening to the Massive Report Podcast.
Welcome to the Massive Report Podcast. Fellas, I was reading something that made me extremely paranoid, I think yesterday. It was an article about how Space Force is working on technology that can pick out an individual vehicle from outer space. But, hear me out here. What if we were able to pick out offsides and possible red card offenses from outer space? Because MLS, with their fake officials, obviously cannot, closer to this mortal coil, make these decisions based on anything that the human brain could comprehend. We'll get to that here in a few moments. We have a lot of bitching to do, believe me. And we'll get to that. And you're used to hearing us bitch on that. And I'm sorry. We'll always find something to complain about. I think, legitimately, we have a lot of gripes. And we will get to them from Saucy Brew Works. Nothing to gripe about here. We got the beer. We got the food. We got the coffee. We got the good company. We got Brett. We got Murph. We got Bart. We got Sam. I'm Brian. And Murph insists that we talk about the happy-go-lucky positives of a 2-0 win.
Loss. I'm putting a timer. We've got three minutes of positive time on
this. The other night, and I agree with you.
Minimum.
I am 0% concerned about the Columbus Crew, except for the injuries. The way we played the other night, we had a chance to win that game.
Yeah. Well, and you just mentioned, you know, we like to bitch a lot. We haven't done much bitching in a while, right? Like, what was the last time we bitched? Maybe the away leg at Atlanta, sort of, even though we were pretty convinced that they would come back and take care of business, and they did. So, look, I watched this game with Bart and some other people. None of us left happy that the Crew lost. Take everything else out. It was not what you wanted to see, right? At least go down there and get a point. We all thought they would probably come away with more. But if this is the way that you are going to lose a game, guys out with international duty, key guys out with international duty, you have two injuries that happen early, you have a red card that by anyone who's ever watched a soccer game before or played soccer realizes
we weren't
bogus.
Supposed to get into that.
No,
yet.
But I'm just saying, like, all of this goes against the team. A goal called back, all that. You lose, like, if that's what it takes for another MLS team to
beat
you.
And they did have to score some banger goals. I mean, like...
And they had to overcome missing a PK, too, that wasn't deserved.
Yeah, and look,
let's be honest. Charlotte team, I would be, if we were doing a Charlotte podcast, where would we be doing this?
Right, where would we be
in
doing
it? In Charlotte.
We'd be a Catawba Brewing Company Charlotte doesn't call their down, this is Brett, by the way, hello. Charlotte doesn't call their downtown. It's called Uptown. Catawba Brewing and Uptown Charlotte.
All right. We'd be talking about our garbage soccer team that was lucky to win this game. That is a trash team, and we needn't concern ourselves with them as far as the big picture. Okay. As far as we're concerned, I felt like given the bad hand that we had in front of us, felt like we did fine, and I'm not worried about it, except for the injuries.
Yeah, I mean, the style of play was still pretty good, even going down a man. And look, you put Rudy Camacho, if he stays healthy for that game, that header that led to the first Charlotte goal is going 20 yards further, and we'll get to Shiburko and his issues with these headers.
And mistaken identity, and a bad case of mistaken
yes,
identity.
Yes, it was. They blamed it on Amundsen on the broadcast.
Wolf. Scandinavian/Eastern European.
I hear
European.
They had
That's
a couple issues with yeah, mistaken right. identity during the broadcast, too. Yeah. Maybe some folks on the sideline.
But then the second goal, I think if Schulte's in goal, I'm not saying he necessarily saves it, but that's it's a hard shot near post, but we've seen him make some big saves. So, like, again, if you are looking to try and get positives out of a 2-0 loss with a lot of controversy, it's... You put all your guys back in there. You play that team. You play that game again, preferably not on that crappy turf that Brett says is actually not that crappy. But
it's not that bad.
Based on injury history, it looks pretty crappy to me. I think you win 9 out of 10 times
sure.
because you're a better team than Charlotte.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Charlotte had I read on MLS Soccer Matthew Doyle. You know, he does his breakdowns of each game in a little. And he only has like 100 words for each team, but he was impressed with the way that Charlotte handled the Crew's death by a thousand blades and he used a passing or what's that called? The passing map.
Of how
they like sat back, and I was like, oh, Matt, you did not watch this game because that's not what happened in this game. Like, you got unfortunate, and look.
It's a lot easier to pass the ball wherever you want when you have one more player than the other team for 85 minutes, and that's might even be on the lower hand when you consider how much stoppage time there was.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and look, you also didn't have Wilfred Nancy on the sideline.
Yeah.
And I think that's something. Yes, he's fine. He was back at training today.
Right.
He was just sick. And he thought he would be all right to travel down there separately. Didn't want to get other players sick. It is what it is. And look, there's full confidence in the rest of that staff, but especially in a game that kind of goes haywire, you'd rather have the head man there making some of those decisions. And I don't know if that changes the outcome, but like that's something that hasn't gotten talked about a lot in this is like, you know, you didn't have your head coach either, and that complicates matters a little bit when and then they do it as a group with the assistant coaches. So like there's not one guy being like, I'm the decision maker. I mean, maybe there is a final say, but Wilfred Nancy is Wilfred Nancy for a reason, and you didn't have him, and that compounds when everything goes off the rails.
Brett, was the game over when Derek Jones was sent off? Should we have given up at that point? Because I felt like we could still win the game.
I kind of felt like the game actually ended when we had two false starts on the kickoff.
that was kind of goofy, too. I don't think I've ever seen that.
Even the Charlotte, I think it's Charlotte Observer is the main paper down there. That is how they started their recap of the game. I think it was something like, you knew you were in for a wild one when you had to take the kickoff twice. Like,
So we're amongst friends, yes?
Yeah, for the most part.
If Sam gives me a little which is fair. First of all, shout out to Saucy Brew Works. I mentioned another brewery in a different state. It's probably no free ads, but it's a great one. If you're down there, go check it out. This is going to be a two-beer podcast.
Oh, yeah. It may be a three-beer podcast because I got here early.
We're about halfway through one. Teaser, I'm going to write about this for MasterReport.com.
Okay.
Murph has already done... Murph did the tactical nuke strike. I'm more going for the cruise missile precision here, aimed at one kind of thing and idea in particular. I would encourage you to go and read Murph's incredible.
I did.
Michael Jordan wearing 45 press release. I'm back. Article on MasterReport.com. And, by the way, if you're a glutton for punishment and a masochist and a member of Opus Dei, go read the comments as well. Apparently, they're entertaining.
Or Twitter today.
Well, and again, it's Monday, and anything can happen, especially with Murph. There's something about Murph Mondays, by the way. I've been batting around this bit in my head that Pat is extra saucy.
Because that's where we are.
Italicized on Mondays. There's something about it. I don't know why, but the Twitter fingers get extra sharp, so to speak, on Mondays, and I dig it. I'm here for it. This is a referendum on leadership. This is a referendum on where MLS currently is, not just in the hierarchy of American professional sports, but also within the landscape of worldwide soccer/football dome.
Which they say is important to them. They want to be a top 10
league, aren't they? I thought they were top 10
league
right now.
In the world is the goal.
One of the great things, and like I said, I'm going to write about this. One of the great things about this league, something that I feel a great deal of kinship and warmth towards, is the idea of just being happy to be here. How many times did we walk into historic Crew Stadium back in 2007, and the fact that it just existed was good enough? How many times did we walk into Crew Stadium in 2011, and it, just the fact that it was there, Tony Chani was doing Tony Chani shit.
That's before he really turned the corner, too.
That's one way to put it. Shout out to Casino Night. If you know, you know. MLS is no longer in a position when you sign a TV deal that has two commas in the number.
Yeah.
And there's a B in front of the illion. You are no longer in a position as a league, collectively, the 22,000 foot view, which coincidentally is the exact camera they use to rule Max Darsen offside. You are no longer in a position as a league to just be happy to be here. You have the potentially greatest player in the league, in the world, playing in your league. You've given
Messi.
And Messi.
Yeah. Good point.
Well played, Bart.
You've done everything that you can to give all the eyeballs that you could possibly accumulate to this product.
You've people to look.
You've corporate hospitalized the bejesus out of everything.
Every square inch.
You cannot do all of that and have Steve from down the street ref your game.
Would you like to hear...
It's not Steve from down the street, thank you. We are talking about Christopher Calderon, okay?
Yeah.
Christopher Calderon of 8 lead refereeing gigs coming into this season of scabbing, 6 of which with MLS Pro, and 2 of which in U.S. Open games, one of them featuring American soccer giants. I mean, true American soccer giant. We are talking about the one and the only. Let me bring up the name here.
This is a U.S. Open Cup.
A U.S. Open Cup team.
I'm assuming that this is a game that you're about to reference that was probably delayed.
El Farolito FC. You may know them. SC. Sorry. You may know them from the California 4th Division, associated with, of course, El Farolito's famous San Francisco taco shop.
Yes.
We make jokes, you know, about this. And I say this coming from a place of love as a person who worked for a hockey team owned by a fireworks company. Okay. We are tight like this. So I can say, that's the level of competition this guy should be reffing, not reffing MLS.
According to his LinkedIn bio, he has reffed hundreds of matches across the United States annually. He lists USSF, MLS, USL Pro, PDL, NCAA, SCSOA, and Cal South. As Bart just eloquently put, I did not find evidence of hundreds of matches that made him qualify.
I have nothing against Chris on a personal or professional level. I have no issue with any of this. But in some ways, I actually think it has less to do with them individually. You can't be a top tier, supposedly competing for the eyeballs of millions, competing with the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, and Gary Bettman's plaything, and also have this gaping, massive, don't belabor the point problem that you can solve by stroking a check and ending it whenever you want for some reasons that defy understanding. It makes no sense to continue to lock out PRSA. It makes no sense.
Yeah, and again,
it's horrible. It's a huge thing. It's a disaster. Regardless of the on-field performances, which, like I said on previous pods, the game management, they've been bad. It's been horrible. But the catastrophic decisions, those necessarily haven't been there. They showed up in a big way, obviously, in the Charlotte game. But the fact that the environment has been cultivated for those catastrophic decisions to occur in the first place, when all it would take is to stroke a check that doesn't put a dent in your cash reserves, that's the issue. That's the problem. And it is a referendum on the league's leadership at the C-suite level, and that's it, period.
Absolutely. Again, you know, it's not a Chris Calderon problem, but let's also be clear. Dude could be wearing an enormous trench coat, and you open it up and you realize he's on the shoulders of the guy who reffed the Red Bulls game, and that guy is on the shoulder of the dude who reffed the Minnesota game, and he would still be in over his head. This, like, this team, what we're seeing from MLS, $95,000 a pop for each team. That's what it would cost to end this. And we also need to recognize that, like, this is a player safety issue. That, like, the Crew have been out-fouled 82-49 through five games. It is a miracle that we haven't seen a serious injury because of the fact that these, just due to the fact that these referees are not able to keep up with the speed and the intensity of an MLS game, are not able to control these teams. We've heard reports of players saying, we look at these guys and you can see fear in their eyes. And what happens when you're an MLS player and you see that? You take everything that you can get. And especially, you know, in that game, Edelman, for instance, on the Red Bulls, that dude was looking to take out Aiden Morse. You look at some of the plays in that game in Carolina. You know, reckless challenges. The one on Nagby that didn't get called inexplicitly wasn't even reviewed.
It did get called.
Yeah. Sorry, a foul.
Nothing. It got called a foul.
Just
yeah.
a foul.
Which is perplexing.
Of the 27 fouls committed by Charlotte FC in that game. But so it's a player safety issue. Also, let's not forget that it has never been more expensive to be an MLS fan and a Columbus Crew supporter than it is this year. Season tickets went up. If you don't not a season ticket holder, well, guess what? You're paying for dynamic price tickets now. Whatever they can, if they can charge you more, they're charging you more. Games are behind a paywall. There's the Messi tax on everything. It has never been more expensive to be an MLS supporter, and they are giving you this garbage. And I'm going to push back. Like, there are just teams off the top of my head. DC United, Charlotte earlier this year, LA Galaxy twice, Sporting Kansas City, Portland, all of these teams who have lost points, and you can point to decisions by these referees that are directly responsible for that. So, yes, we may not have had, you know, a game, although, again, if the Red Bulls game isn't 3-0, you take the scoreline out, we would be here fuming about that game a couple weeks ago. That was atrocious. It just happened to be that Crew was able to, you know, play through that, score three times against a team that suddenly looks pretty good, by the way. But the fact that the Crew haven't been burnt as bad as they were in this game doesn't mean that this hasn't been a dumpster fire all season.
Right.
And I think we are doing a disservice to ourselves by giving them any benefit of the doubt. Again, this isn't about the referees. This is about a completely cynical, short-sighted money grab and a test balloon, I think, this is for trying to, you know, break eventually in the future the MLS Players Association when they need to. We can't give Don Garber and these guys any leeway. This has been an embarrassment, and they need to be on blast for it.
I want to talk about the offside and how I saw it on TV, because we all saw it. I'd never... Normally, when it goes to VAR, we're given some sort of view as to what we think they're looking at. And it seemed to me that the guys doing the telecast had a different view than the rest of us. And we only got that one angle. And it was almost like they put into ChatGPT.
It's the flyover. You know,
can you give me a weird angle of the field to put in a box, please? Because did they have, all of a sudden, all the cameras went out and they only had one? I don't, Brett, you're a TV guy.
Yeah.
Explain to me what that was and what it means.
So I do, so I'll give you some logistics first. NFL Stadium, as we all know, I think it was maybe 3 years ago. I guess it would have been 4 years ago now. WEWS Channel 5 in Cleveland did an investigative report about the number of cameras that existed at NFL games because the Browns got screwed on a goal line call.
I remember.
And it turned out that essentially there wasn't a standard number of cameras.
And
because
they
were further down on the totem pole, so to speak, of that Fox broadcast,
right,
there wasn't an end zone
camera
to essentially overrule what was a bad call in the first place. Now the NFL has standardized the minimum number of cameras, and there has to be two on the each end zone, right? To do the whole kind of break the plane shot, right? If you think about that in the logistics of soccer, FIFA regulations, the camera bay is at Bank of America Field, which I think that's what it's called now, Bank of America Stadium.
Correct.
Are like about 10 yards, 5 to 10 yards. I think it's actually like 18 feet off to have proper straight line dynamic sight lines for offside. What we think of is like essentially being parallel, perfectly parallel to the 18-yard box. They don't have those bays. And because they do all lower bowl seating, it's not like you can just plop a hard case camera there, you know, because it's in the middle of a row. So I know that Charlotte struggles to shoot offside. A lot of it's up in that middle tier bowl. That's a big issue for the TV broadcast there. It's a lot of cabling, that kind of stuff. All that being said, they blew it in a way that I've never seen it blown.
The assistant
before.
Never put his flag up.
Correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this was buzzed down from on high.
Yeah.
And then they looked at it, but nobody
in the Madden view.
Nobody could, watching the game. Normally, when I'm watching a match, I at least have, I can disagree, but at least I have some sort of view where I go, okay, I can see where he might have been 1 inch offside or not offside. On this one, it was completely opaque. It's like they were trying to hide. Well, I'm not trying to be conspiratorial here. What I'm asking is, if you don't have the angle, it should never go to VAR ever.
Well, I think I'm going to steal Murph's next sentence, but the whole point of VAR is to correct clear and obvious errors, right? That wasn't how VAR was used in this game. VAR was essentially used as a crutch to a referee who was unprepared to be able to call those moments in a game because they just don't have the
experience. He's not going to call offsides anyway.
The other thing too, and I don't think this can be stated enough. The people running VAR are pro referee, which is the organization that
it's Mark Geiger.
Mark Geiger at all.
Yeah. Well, this one
is not Mark Geiger running this.
This was Frank Anderson.
Yeah.
He retired last year to be pro's manager of senior assistant referees.
Yeah. But
and a few years ago, he was the assistant referee of the year in Major League Soccer.
But who we are talking about are the gatekeepers who are deciding who gets MLS games and who doesn't. All the people who are reffing these games, and I'm air quoting replacement referees, all of these people want to get through these gatekeepers to ref MLS games in the future. Why in the world would we accept that power dynamic? We wouldn't accept that if we worked it nationwide. The people who are making the decisions regarding future employment are the ones directing the people on the field. That's not how any of this
should
work.
You're going to defer to them every single time.
Which is why we are seeing historic levels of overturning of calls after going to the monitor. Mm-hmm. Because that power dynamic is bad. Mm-hmm. Period.
It's been flipped on its head.
And so, that one shouldn't go. That one shouldn't go to the monitor. That one's bad. The fact that the penalty doesn't go to the monitor is bad.
All right. Before you go, I want to read, because the referee, for those who don't know.
You're going to read the pool report, I'm assuming. The pool report is hot garbage and it needs to go away.
Yes. But there does need to be a way to get explanations from the officials. The way that it's handled currently is there's a designated reporter who covers each team, and there's substitutes as well, that if there's a controversy call, you jot it down. You have, 15 minutes, I think, from the final whistle.
To send it into a numeric
tube.
You get
it to the referee, and then the referee, I think you can do up to 3 questions. Maybe it's 2 questions.
I have way more questions than 3
better not be 4 bad calls.
You never get the opportunity to ask that person directly.
Correct. That's why
Matt Miazga went in there.
Yeah. So it's a very poor system, to Brett's point. But I want to read the questions and the answers to both of those calls you just mentioned, Brett. On the VAR call, what would factors or considerations went to deeming Columbus's number 27, Max Arfstrom, offside? Why weren't multiple angles used? Answer. Columbus crew number 27 was in offside position when the ball was played forward by Columbus goalkeeper number 24. A combination of beauty camera, which was the camera Brett was explaining earlier. I just learned this thanks to Chris Dorn the other day.
The Hubble telescope camera.
And a right yard, 18-yard camera confirmed his offside position. Before I read the second one, I want to tell you right now, this is a lie. There was no second camera. People sitting at this table have confirmed this. Multiple people sitting at this table have confirmed this. This is a guy who's never dealt with pool reporting before, I'm sure, because he was an assistant referee in a handful of those games you mentioned, Bart, and he had to justify his answer, knowing there's no repercussion, because you just give this answer back, they report it.
Yeah.
So that's just, there was no second angle. If you go back and watch the replay of the game, they briefly cut to Christian sitting on the bench, but you see the entire time as like it's like a two-shot thing. You see what the referee's looking at, and you can see they're going back and forth from the Hubble telescope cam. There's never a second angle. Now, we don't know what the VAR sees on the broadcast, but we do know because we've talked to people, there was not a second angle.
Well, the camera position that he is referencing does not exist at Bank America Stadium,
right.
Which is what I just said.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And I have talked to people, other people have talked to people that have said there was that was the angle they used. What you saw on TV was what was used. Now, on the second one, how did the contact rise to the level of a penalty against Vargas? Answer, Yao Yeboah, number 14 of Columbus, he's already switched the way he's using numbers and player names in the course of writing this answer, of Columbus, committed a foul into his opponent's back, no apostrophe, that prevented his opponent from playing the ball in a fair manner. Yao Yeboah, number 14, was cautioned for stopping a promising attack. If you go back and watch that play, the only contact to anyone's back was to Yao Yeboah's back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The ball was 5 yards out of bounds before there was anything happening.
It was a collision. It happens.
Yes. And, you know, look, the penalty kick, all's well that ends well, and that's what I said in the article I wrote. Guy skies it over the goal, and you don't have to worry about it. But these are... The pool reporting to Brett's previous statement is garbage anyway. But to have these answers is even worse because you're just making things up at this point.
Yeah, you might as well let Dan Kortsmarch write these ones for you.
Or just say no. Like, we're not going to let you talk to the refs.
No comment.
Yeah.
Yeah. No comment.
Which, frankly, they can write that.
Yeah.
They can write whatever they want down. There's no.
That's happened in the past.
Yeah. And there's no. There's no repercussion. Even when
there
you
are
have
some, there are sorry to continue. Just to, there are some refs who literally won't answer.
Yeah,
the repercussions here would be a nice pat on the head, like from.
But I'm saying even with the normal MLS officials, you usually get crap answers, and it's unfortunate because the job is the person going to the pool as the pool reporter is to say bring back information that then we can put out to the fans. And if you're not going to be transparent and you're not going to allow an actual conversation, look, it's not like you're saying fans get to go down and yell at the ref, right? You're saying somebody who has been in the press box, you're credentialed for the game, therefore you are saying this person has the authority to have these type of conversations without it arising to, like, anger or anything amongst, you know, the person should not be, if they're going to be upset about a call, they should not be sitting in the press box, right? So that person should be able to, I believe, have a conversation with the official, record that conversation just like they do with the head coach and the players after the game. The fact that it's just a written response that you don't get to have any sort of actual interaction with is bad in and of itself. And then you compound it by guys that have never done this before and are trying, to Brett's point, kind of cover their ass because they're getting this audition.
Yeah.
Well, the I think the thing that frustrates me as well, and I'll reference back, after we were done last week, I read this Athletic piece on the frustration from some other clubs beginning to boil to the surface. Some guys saying, I'm going to be fine, but I need to say this. The answer that we're getting from the league for any of this is, you know, happy, happy, joy, joy. And that is extremely frustrating. guys are running to the bar here.
Everybody just went re-upped, by the way. Just for future reference. Everyone went re-upped.
The answers from Don Garber on down are, well, it's great. We're happy with it. There's never any other answer coming from the league other than gaslighting, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're not idiots. We can see what we can see, and all of us have varying degrees of knowledge about the game. But I think what they're counting on is that most people are going to the games to have a few beers with their friends and sing some songs. And they're not particularly concerned one way or the other about what's going on the field. That's part of your fan base, but that's not your fan base.
Well, I think what you're talking about here is questioning the priority of Don Garber at all, not just for 2024 but beyond. Do you care that the Continental Tire whatever contract keeps ringing up, or do you care that the soccer's good? Well, the soccer being good and everything kind of encompassing under that umbrella, that's the cornerstone, the foundation, and like everything that this entire venture is built upon. In my opinion, the attention that has been the attention of the league has been drawn away from that and has been entirely focused on the marketing of one team, the marketing of one player, and the idea of trying to get this TV deal, and then it's this kind of associated kind of mechanisms off the ground while building the airplane as it's taking off. And all that's fine, well, and good if the soccer doesn't suck and if the soccer isn't a problem. But if that's the problem, none of the other stuff matters, right? If everything kind of feels farcical, no corporation is buying a suite at whatever Drive Pink Stadium in Fort Lauderdale is currently called. I think it's Chase Field now.
Yes.
Uber isn't buying that hospitality suite if the thing stinks. And that's your issue. And that's where the attention needs to be
paid. And what's tragic never been more talent in this league than there is right now.
And that's the problem. And by the way, if you want to look at the other leagues around the league or around the country, you know what they're concentrating on? Making sure the players are happy and that everything in terms of the on-field product works. Because everything else happens and kind of works its way out after that.
And that's when you look at, like, when you really think about it, that is the only audience. Because clearly they're not concerned about players. You hear the Players Association, they've been very... Don Garber tried to say, oh, players and coaches, they're fine with everything. MLSPA came out and smacked that down so fast.
Yeah.
No, they're not. They're worried about their safety. They're saying these guys, while not trying to get, you know, their players, poor treatment, they're saying these guys are clearly over their head. They're not on this. They've been, you know, in solidarity with the Referees Association every time. They clearly don't care about what the coaches think. They don't care about what the supporters, because supporters have been complaining about this, you know, as much as possible. It's ultimately about those corporate sponsors and those 30 plus or minus, you know, 12 when you co-owners and whatever, you know, however many celebrity owners that they've got over at, LAFC right. And, you know, Matt McConaughey's and stuff, keeping them happy. And yeah, for them, it's... And that's the thing that is still just so infuriating, that, you know, ultimately it is nothing for these guys. Jimmy Haslam went today and said, hey, I'm going to need $1 billion to, you know, get a, you know, revamp Cleveland Browns Stadium. But this dude doesn't have $95,000, you know, in his cushion. We know he does. We've seen his, campaign finance returns. You look at any of these guys, they can obviously pay for it. And it's just... It is just a luck of a draw right now. Oh, nice. That Inter Miami hasn't gotten it hasn't gotten any bad calls, and that's where the conspiratorial like tinfoil hat comes in, because like odds are they should have when you just look at everything else, but they have been the beneficiaries on all of this. And
their first game of the year was a little rough.
Well, it was a little rough for LA, no. LA Galaxy, yeah, for sure.
Marky Delgado,
RSL, sorry, yeah.
I do think it was pointed out to me, and like if we're talking conspiracy theories here, and I'm not advocating this point, but
you're about to advocate for the point.
I just want to bring this up. If you happen to be not watching March Madness around between 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. on Saturday, and maybe flipped over to Apple TV and watched Miami without Messi, but with pretty much everyone else, get absolutely destroyed at Red Bull Arena in a game in which Miami didn't come out of the halftime locker room until 3 minutes after the half was supposed to start. Taylor Twellman went off on Twitter, if you want to read that whole thing, because it was cold and rainy. But, I mean, they got destroyed. It was 4-0.
Messi didn't play in that game.
Correct. Right? Messi did not play. But Suarez played. Most of their guys played. They get destroyed in the cold. Had the Crew won that game, they would have been in very good spot in a very early supporter shield race.
Would have set or tied a record, too, for best record after winning MLS Cup.
And that doesn't happen. And now here we sit talking controversies. And again, I'm never going to, especially, I'll call out refs when I feel like it's needed. I don't think there was a call made down to Calderon, Christopher Calderon, to say, hey, right, don't let the Crew win
the
this
Gorbachev
game.
I think it's just incompetence.
Okay, so here's the thing. And again, I'm gonna, you know, caveat this with saying at the beginning that I do not believe that there is a match rigging conspiracy against Crew. But
have you ever heard about deer antler spray?
No, all I'm saying is like, look, we are all living with the terrible knowledge, you know, understanding that like there was a conspiracy, like the most egregious conspiracy you could possibly have at the highest levels of MLS. The league commissioner conspired to relocate this team. Okay? That happened. That there's no debate about it. And so when you recognize that that happened, then the only reason that it did not happen was that fans in Columbus made such stink about it and revealed the conspiracy for what it was.
And then you learned about Ohio Revised Code.
Exactly. Yeah. And we also, you know, we had some, you know, legal wrangling that went on too. But that was all because of this and because we understood the conspiracy. But when you recognize that there was a conspiracy, that like nothing is that big of a leap. Oh, so you think one game or something like that? Because it is so compartmentalized right now. This isn't something where you would need to have hundreds of people keeping silent. It is Mark Geiger and what's his name, the other assistant general manager and pro, and Don Garber making a call. Now, I'm not saying again that happens. the fact of, you know, a previous league sponsored conspiracy against the Crew is not evidence of a current one, but fans have been through a collective trauma, and it's a natural trauma response when something like that happens to go to that. And it's not something like, you know, it's harmless.
This is what I've said from day one of the rebrand, mm-hmm, is that if there was anybody in the room when the Crew went from the circle badge to the carabiner, if there was anybody in the room who was aware of how recent the trauma from Save the Crew, how recent that trauma is, and how essentially those scars were entirely unhealed, anybody with some with some shreds of empathy would have said, yes, it's your team, it is your plaything, you can do with it what you will. But maybe it's too early because of what has previously happened. I don't think it's a stretch. I mean, we're not necessarily connecting dot A and dot D here to say that when stuff like this happens, the spidey sense because ours happens to be turned up to 99, this one goes to 11. When stuff like this happens, you can't help but feel that way. It's a subconscious response. That being said, I do kind of love the idea, the borderline anarchist in me. I love the idea of like a Gorbachev red phone that exists somewhere on a Park Avenue office building that Donnie G picks up and says,
"Execute order, Mr. 66.
Mark, that play was offside." In the same vein of like Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. I kind of love that idea. That sounds amazing.
It's not, like canonically, VAR is Tinder on Don Garber's phone only. You can see he gets a notification when the VAR thing comes up. And yeah, and it's like, oh, let me look at the replay. What do I
Which
think?
Which team is this?
Yep, left or right?
Wait, the crew have scored despite being down a man and two engines? Yeah. I think, first of all, I think that it is perfectly reasonable for fans to have this reaction.
Yeah, it's fine.
You're
wrong. It doesn't
Well,
exist,
and that's what I was going to say, look,
there is no conspiracy.
Going back to our original point, if this is what the league has to do to get this team from not winning, let's say we believe this conspiracy for a minute, like, fine, your team is going to be really, your team's really freaking good, right? But B, I think I started with one, so let's go with B. The fact of the matter is that building the stadium downtown and playing the way that this team has and investing the way this team has changed the perspective in the league. And I know this for a fact. And I completely get the fan side of it. And I was as frustrated as anyone on Saturday. And I've been frustrated, you know, obviously through the Save the Crew stuff. But the Crew have quietly become a team that, at least from a ownership organizational standpoint, I'm not talking about the stuff that happens on the field. This league actually really likes what's going on in Columbus. And I know this for a fact. And so I think, look, you're still allowed to, I think even the LA Galaxy in their heyday would have conspiracies about what is going on. And so I think that's only natural for fans to do, especially coming off a game like this. But like, I want everyone to think about the fact that like, you may not be the big city team that some of these are. You don't have a Messi on your team, but the league is recognizing what's being built in Columbus. Like the All-Star game isn't coming here. Obviously the stadium and stuff, but like this was a reward. They didn't have to give them to this quickly, but it was like, you guys not only have built this stadium and, you know, given this in a downtown location, this kind of things we used to just dream about,
grass,
right? But
again,
you're investing in players, you're investing in a coach, both of which at some point might be a valuable commodity moving on to Europe. Yeah. And there's been some appreciation for that. Plus, you have Tim Bezbachenko, who the league really, really does like because he wrote half the rules. I don't know if we have time, but are we going to talk about this red card? Because I really want to talk about this red card and why it made no sense.
I want to talk about the red phone.
15 minutes.
Sam says we had 15 minutes. We still have to preview Nashville, so make it quick on the red card.
Look, real quick, you can read what I wrote if you want to go into it. Jones has the ball at his feet. He rolls the ball underneath him and turns. As a defender comes from his left side, he recognizes and touches the ball to his right. The foot has to go down somewhere. And what's the difference between... This happens all the time. Like, sometimes you land on an ankle, sometimes you land on a foot, sometimes you land on the ground. There's no studs up, which is what I keep seeing people saying. Studs up means your foot isn't landing on the ground. Your foot's going in a...
You can tell when somebody is coming in with intent. Yeah.
And
with malevolent...
And look, it is a
intent.
Yes. It is in a very unfortunate...
That's the word I was looking for.
It's a very unfortunate situation.
By the way, Brian's the only one who doesn't have a beer right now, which is fantastic.
Sam doesn't have a beer.
I just have a hard time with that word.
It's super unfortunate because he does come down on foot, ankle. It's hard to tell exactly where. And that is definitely painful, and I understand. The referee, Calderon, was not much further than we are from the play, didn't call a foul. The fact that was buzzed down to him, when you are in the, going back to clear and obvious, when you are in a position to see it that clearly, now if he had gone, you know, his foot had gone way up and he'd gone into his thigh or something, like, fine, go have a look at it. And I think it's probably a foul. I'm not arguing
sure,
that.
Give him a yellow card. Yep. I don't care. Yep. But, you know,
but to go and give him a straight red.
Yeah, that
and
was ridiculous.
Then, I don't remember how long later it was in the match when Darlington Nagbe, this time, not a great pass out of the back. He has to, you know, an attacker, I guess, is coming back to the ball to try and get to the ball before Darlington. So he stretches to get the ball away. Guy comes down. Same thing in a situation where, like, player's foot's already up as he reached for the ball. He's coming down. Darlington's foot happens to go underneath it, just like I think it's Diani's foot was underneath Jones's. Like, neither of those are things that I think should be red cards, because you're not intending to stomp on a guy or anything like that. And this is not the first time this happens in the EPL, that sometimes this gets red cards, but sometimes it doesn't. And that's the problem with VAR in general. And that's kind of the point I wanted to make, is you're slowing it down, you're pausing it. It looks bad when you do things like that. This isn't an offside that's clearly off, or, you know, a referee is shielded by a player so he can't see a penalty kick or something off the ball that he's not looking the right way. This is a play that happens in soccer all the time. And again, I say the same with Darlington. I don't, you know, as much as that could have really hurt Darlington, as opposed to this one that's just a stomp on the ankle, it's still not a red card to me, except that it was a red card earlier in the match.
Yeah.
And this wasn't reviewed. It wasn't, you know, I don't know what's happening in the headset, but he never even indicated that he's going to look at the monitor or anything like that. And then immediately afterwards, Cucho gets taken down from behind, and Diego Rossi is losing his ever-loving mind because these two fouls, and again, I don't think that the Cucho one was a red card, but he does get taken down from behind. I had Charlotte fans telling me that there were bad calls for Charlotte, and I'm sure there probably were. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but these are three bad calls in the span of less than 45 minutes, and one goes one way, and the other two go very differently the other way, plus everything else we've talked about. You know, if we're talking conspiracy theories in a game, this is that half was the closest thing I've seen.
And I'm just like, I don't think there's any value to playing in Charlotte. Honestly, like, I mean, what are they, 0-3 or 0-2-1?
Yeah.
Like, or 0-1-2. Like, it's just...
Three now potential long-term injuries.
Exactly. And so it's just like, no, take the DQ. What is it? 3-0 is a loss if you do
honestly,
a DQ.
I take it.
Like,
can you imagine?
We
shan't play.
I love the idea of going in keeping with the Soviet Union bit. But I love the idea of going full nuclear option, like mutually assured destruction, just forfeiting because you just don't want to go to Charlotte.
Yeah. And I said in the story I wrote, like, I'm mostly kidding here. But if Wilfred Nancy next year was like, screw you, we're not doing this, like, what message would that send to this league? Because not only is it the turf that has gotten guys injured now, but also all the things we talked about with the camera angles. Like, why are you allowed to have this stadium? Remember when MLS said expansion teams have to at least have the
XYZ,
plan in place?
Right. You need prerequisites, right? And that was one of them.
You know, you look at Atlanta, that was built with soccer in mind. So there are cameras, spaces for cameras to do that. Seattle, I believe, has figured it out there. I still don't like the idea that they're playing in these NFL stadiums, but whatever, you get more attendance, I guess. But that stadium should not... Either you need to get that ownership group to fix the stadium so it's ready for soccer, or you need to get the hell out of there. And I'm not talking about Charlotte. I'm talking about other teams need to get the hell out of there.
Yeah. To kind of circle back to the play, I have also kind of an issue with how ambiguous the dangerous play rule in MLS is kind of written. I think it could be more specific. It probably should be.
But to me, dangerous play is like porn. Like, you know it when you see it.
Yeah, and so...
Obscenity.
Oh my God, the world's colliding there with my wife being in law school. But
God knows what we're going to see on the
what
screen
about
next week.
But no, there's, I think there's a, you know, there's something to be said for, players know. And I think players' reactions on the field usually have a good way of kind of indicating how things actually are. And the fact that crew players were losing their minds and Charlotte players were trying to run and hide and act like nothing was going on the Nagby play, well, probably speaks to the severity of that moment.
Well, also, and the penalty kick, too. One Charlotte player raised his hand, and he was behind the play.
Out of nowhere, yeah.
Mo Farsi literally...
do. I'm raising my hand like as a fan at one of those.
Mo Farsi's literally showing the referee on the scoreboard the replay of the play, which I've talked to crew fans who were there. They showed it there.
Yeah.
And no one in the stadium erupted in like, definitely a foul type thing. Like, it was more like, oh, no, this is going to come back.
But I think the Derrick Jones play is also... a situation where when it happened, no Charlotte players are losing their mind.
Cucho let the ball run out of bounds. Yeah. If you think your guy's about to get the red card, you're going to try and keep playing as long as possible.
Well, and the Charlotte players are going to be pretty pissed off that this guy purposely hurt one of our guys.
Now, to be fair, Derrick Jones did play with a lot of these guys last year, so...
There's something to that, I'm sure. But, like, the idea... Like, I think players know. Like, there's a... Like, there's something to that, right? But again, it goes back to everything for me in terms of this entire situation and then also league-wide. Goes back to the power dynamic of VAR and the center ref and how that's a problem. And the fact that hasn't been addressed already is a referendum on league leadership. And the fact that it was allowed to happen is a disaster.
Well, and I don't think this is just an MLS problem. You watch games around the world. There is an over-reliance on VAR, and they haven't figured out a way to correctly use instant replay capabilities in soccer to A, not have it be calling the game, and B, not having it take for so... I mean, like, if you're the EPL, I guess if you want to draw the lines and everything, that's great, and, like, you get the call right eventually, but it sometimes takes 5-6 minutes. Like, this is supposed to be the game that just keeps playing, and there's no...
I never, in my wildest dreams, thought I'd keep seeing plus 12.
Yeah.
I mean, where does this end?
Where does this end?
Plus 20?
That's my 30? Kind of final thought here is
plus
that.
Plus 45?
Why it's so egregious, and in my mind, why it's so obvious, is that you are seeing things that we have never encountered before, which is a goal in the 60th minute that counts in the first half.
And then a penalty kick afterwards.
More than anything that we have previously witnessed in the history of this league should signal to the C-suite of Major League Soccer that they have a significant problem that is well within their control to fix today or tomorrow. Tomorrow being the 26th. This should end by Friday.
But there are some reports that I've heard some things too, but there's conflicting
things going on there. But it the Columbus game, in and of itself, is not necessarily indicative of a problem, even though I kind of think it is. But everything that we have seen from that, going back to the beginning of the year, signals to me that you have a significant issue that you can solve with one meeting, and it doesn't cost you anything in terms of financial issues or severity, and earns you all of the equity and goodwill with the people who matter in this situation, which is your fans.
I will just say, I don't know that at this point it earns you any goodwill, but somehow it will, because...
In the long run, it does.
Yeah, long run potentially, but it's like, oh, well, thank you for choosing not to stick with replacement refs the entire time. Especially if I'm one of those, if I'm a team that misses out on the playoffs because of one of these absurd, you know,
or
things.
Imagine if this carries on and this is what we're getting in the playoffs.
Oh, God, I can't imagine. Certainly Don wouldn't let this happen for League's Cup.
Well, those are different refs.
No, I don't think they would.
I know, I'm just kidding.
But I think what this will do is it's somehow like created, like, I am just here being like watching this game last week and being like, I need to write to Victor Rivas and apologize.
That is very big of Bart to, like, if he does.
I have been to, like, I have get like there's nothing of all the like times I've complained about that guy. There's just nothing that like has been as egregious on the level as like four different calls I can point to in that game.
Yeah.
In that one singular game, in at least, you know, eight crew matches that he personally has been the head ref for, and that for some reason I've just always like, how are you? This is what you've done, Don Garber. I'm almost ready to be like, hey, Marufo, like, we're gonna let the jersey swap go, man. We're gonna let the ball that went out of bounds go.
Sam is about to send us off here, so.
And we need to.
We only have a few more.
We
minutes
need to talk about this Nashville.
There's a game too.
5 minutes all left. Right. Real quick, do we know anything about the injuries? Yeah. Concrete.
I would say the silence from people reaching out to people is deafening, and generally that's not a good thing. Generally, if it's not a big deal, people will, hey, you know, he'll be back next week. He'll be back in a week or two. When I've reached out to people, I know Brett's reached out to people too. So if I'm a crew fan, I would not expect to see either guy in a uniform on the field for a little while. And if that is wrong and they are back here quickly, that's a good thing.
Any chance that Derek Jones has his red card suspension overturned?
No.
We saw one earlier this
week. No, but the thing is, the way that the rules are set up,
yeah, that's
it doesn't make
say.
A sense for the crew to appeal right. a backup midfielder when you've got Aiden Morris coming back next week.
I think you
you only get if you lose, you only get you're done.
Right.
The rest
part
of
it, part of it is cachet, right? Like that's your issue. The way the rules are written. So I think Derek has to eat it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
If it was an Aiden Morris red card,
yes,
they'd be appealing it, and that would have come out already.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Nashville has their own problems with Walker Zimmerman missing on Saturday at LAFC, and they just get drilled 5-0. I think maybe it's one of those games, and obviously I think so highly of Zimmerman as a player that obviously his loss is huge for this team. I don't see him playing this Saturday. I don't know, and they're 1-3-1 on the year. I don't know if this is a game that tells us something about Nashville or it's just quote unquote one of those nights, because they just seem like the wave came in from the Pacific and just took him out to sea, yeah. And it was over.
Yeah. I mean, Walker Zimmerman hasn't played since March 7th, so we're going almost on a month here. I would be surprised, based on kind of how they were talking about him even 2 weeks ago when I watched the game, if he's back, which is good news for the crew.
You know who they miss, Bart? They missed Dax McCarty.
Donks McAfee.
Well, I'll tell you who they're going to miss on Saturday Malarkey. Against us.
They miss Fafa Picot as well.
Willis was not going to play. He got a red card for handling with the ball, hit his arm as he left the box. He was clearly out of the box. They got that one right. Straight red, as the rule book says, and he was out of there. So he's not going to be between the pipes in Nashville on Saturday either. Here's a club that, like most of MLS, plays much better at home than they do on the road. So we certainly should expect a full effort with the guys that they have.
To me, Nashville plays very similar to the way the crew played under Greg Berhalter. It's a lot of possession, get the ball outside, you're trying to cross Greg Berhalter, when he had a target forward, Kai Kamara, Giassi, you know, it's a lot of crossing. They've obviously got a nice player in Mukhtar, more than nice player in Mukhtar. Yeah, I don't
want, although he still doesn't look like he's up to 100.
No,
he missed a couple of those games.
And I was going to say, he is not hit full speed yet. Their striker, whose name is escaping me,
Surge.
Yeah, he has been very dangerous with his head. If Rudy Camacho is not available, as we probably expect, that's a blow, because he would go toe-to-toe with that guy. You know, you think back to the Nashville game last year. We were talking about this before we went on. That was a 60-ish minute, very competitive game. Nashville scores on two set pieces, and the game changes. And I think that's similar to this. If you can defend the crosses or keep them from crossing the ball, which I think may be a bigger thing if you don't have Camacho in there. And I will be very interested to see what they do, because Shaburko has just not especially in a game where you're going to have to use your head a lot. Mm-hmm. He has been, you know, you think back to last year in Orlando during the regular season. There's been a few of these headers that just like, come on, man, put, you know, you got to get your body behind it.
Or let it go and Evan Bush picks the ball up.
That's fine too, in that, in this specific. But like,
In the Charlotte game.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know if you go with him. We talked about Philip Quinton last week, not looking great with Crew 2. I saw him in the replay of the goal, just kind of putting his hand in his head. It'll be very interesting. If Camacho can't go, do you go with Zawatski in the middle again?
Pretty much have to, I
guess,
think.
But like, you're just giving up so much. And now, Zawatski last year, what was it, the Leagues Cup game, Club America?
Yeah.
He battled with a guy who was significantly bigger than him and played the best game I think he's ever played in a Crew jersey. So maybe he rises to the occasion if that's what you have to do. But again, this is, they're going to want to possess. They're at home. You know, the Crew are going to want to possess too, don't get me wrong. But it's a lot of get the ball out wide, get the crosses into their version of Kai Kamara and let him go to work. And then obviously you've got stuff playing off of him with some of their other players behind. But look, for me, this is, you got hosed last week. You lose 2-0. Fine. You take your first loss of season. You're no longer one of the undefeated teams. You're not top of the table anymore. Here's your chance to respond. You're on the road again against a team who also got shellacked, and not because of the refs, but because of the opponent at LAFC who hadn't scored a goal in like 17 years.
That'll change when they get Giroux.
How do you respond? Can you get, you know, this two-game road trip, can you get a result? The great teams, if we're talking supporter shield, this is a game you go get a result in one way or the other.
See, I have 100% confidence that the mindset will be absolutely where it needs to be.
Oh, I completely agree.
I think that we'll benefit from the fact that we had that patchwork back line for so much of last season, and now they have to kind of revert back to, well, what was that like? What did that look like? What did you do? What did I do? And so they're going to be able to draw on this experience, which could be enough to carry him forward here.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's, you know, the Gary Smith experience with Nashville is kind of interesting because I think there's a growing target on that a little bit for them.
Good early, not as good late in the season has been the trajectory.
And maybe defensive when you don't need to be a little bit too. But I think this is like a gut check game a little bit. And I love it on the surface of that because I think in terms of like buy-in with like philosophy, two of the best teams in the league that have that are both Nashville and the Columbus Crew. So I think I like where it's at. A pissed off Cucho is a dangerous Cucho. I thought the lack of a Columbia call up was a huge mistake from them. He looked like he had his hair on fire. Silver fire in Charlotte. I would expect that to continue because you know he's on one and then some. So yeah, I mean it's an opportunity for them to respond in a way that we really haven't seen them yet because this is kind of a new thing and under the Wilfred Nancy tenure. I love this game. I think it's a fascinating game. I can't wait for it. It's going to be great.
And I just want to say one thing. If the Crew go and lose to Nashville in a hard-fought game and they come back after this road trip with no points, again, not the end of the world. You went into a game where you were the better team when you were at full strength and even sometimes when you weren't. You lose. Fine. That happens on the road in MLS. You go to a team in Nashville who just got shellacked again on the road. They come to their place and they beat you potentially. Fine. You come back. You've got Tigres at home. You've got DC at home. Those are two opportunities to bounce back at home, and then you're feeling good as you kind of keep rolling things. Yeah. So,
well, I'm more concerned about the injuries.
The other thing to keep in mind, you don't have to make up ground now because it's all kind of house money a little bit. When Copa America rolls around, that's where the door opens a little bit. If you kind of pick up what I'm putting down here, that's where the door opens end of June and July.
With call-ups and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. That's where the Heath Ledger Batman and Here We Go .gif. That's where it matters. That's where you make up ground.
All right, let's make our picks and get out of here and just hope and somehow they can solve this officiating thing by Saturday. Wouldn't that be tremendous?
Or maybe there's just like a reverse performance and the crew get... that probably happened at home, not on the road.
When has crew gotten that? That's again, more argument for conspiracy.
All right, let's make our picks and get out of here, Brett.
Yeah, so I still think it's a Cucho show to begin with. I don't think they can really stop him. And I do think Nashua has a tendency when they get pressured to get defensive.
Cucho's on fire.
So it's a 2-1 crew victory. I don't think they have the firepower to score two outside of something crazy happening, which of course is in the realm of possibility. But 2-1 crew.
All right. Murph,
I'm going to say 2-2. I think. Look, going back to before the playoffs last year, like this team hasn't been phenomenal on the road. So I think that would be a decent result. I think that this is going to be a pretty open game with two teams trying to attack a lot. I think the wing back areas, Nashville plays with the back four, but like behind those backs are going to be spaces that are going to be open. I think both teams will be able to exploit that some, and they're going to be goals. And they'll be there.
All right. Sam?
2-2. He also
says 2-2. Bart, I'll pick because I always love your pick to go last. I'm struggling with this one. I'm kind of going the other way.
Do it.
I'm going to go 1-1.
I like it.
I think this is... there will be many expected goals. And I probably shouldn't say this because they don't even have their starting goalie. It's just a gut feeling that it's just a good old-fashioned 1-1 draw.
When we didn't mention before Bart picks, you're going to get Schulte back. You're going to get Russell Rowe back. You're going to get Morris back.
Yeah.
Aiden Moore or Alex Matan, from my understanding, is pretty close to getting back in there, which if you miss Christian Ramirez, you know what Alex Matan gives you. So if he's back this, you know, you could look way more like yourself than you did against Charlotte, potentially.
Yeah. Right.
I'm going with 3-1.
Love it.
Again, I think Ani Mukhtar's too talented to, I think he finally maybe gets off a snipe for them, but I think with the backup goalie in, with this team just coming for vengeance, and I think this Nashville team may have peaked a couple years ago, frankly, at least just with their makeup. So I think, one, we are so due for a Diego Rossi goal.
No one has more touches inside the opponent's box than him.
And I thought he was good on Saturday.
Yeah, he puts that
not
one
perfect, but good.
From a very tough angle, but would have liked a little bit more. I feel like he is due. And man, Jason Russell Rowe, I didn't see what he did with Canada or if he even got any minutes.
He did play a little bit.
But I think he's starting to feel it now, right? And that's the difference. And I think he's going to probably force his way into the top three by the end of this season with the way that he's playing and his upside. Jason Russell Rowe gets one. We'll add one for Cucho, too.
Just don't give up set pieces near the box.
Yeah.
It's like when they had Lucas here. They're more of an indirect set piece team, but we saw how dangerous that is. That's how they will probably score goals, that and the crosses.
All right. Very good. And with that, hopefully we won't have near as much to rant about next week. We can hope. Thanks to Sasa Brewworks for having us. Like and subscribe to the Massport Podcast if you would. For Brett, Murph, Mark, Sam, I'm Brian. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.